I just added Sam.
Good. Oh, so,
Sam, are you there?
I'm right here.
Oh, excellent.
We already did the show, dude.
Yeah.
Sucks. It was great. You messaged me and asked if I was ready, and I said I was, and I was taking a big pull off of my coffee mug when you called. So
sorry.
Had to choke that down real quick.
I thought you were going to say something else. I was taking a big...
whatever. No, that's your job, Scott.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what you do during the show.
By the way, I did sneak one in the last show.
Excellent. But, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If you listen real carefully, somewhere maybe half hour left in the show, you might hear some ceramic, you know.
Don't think it
water.
Was that's, snuck that's in exactly fantastic. If people know it's there. I am recording now.
Oh, good.
Yes. Awesome. I was asked, someone asked me to put the date at the beginning of all of our shows.
Well, that's a good
idea. Squatch date.
27. Captain's log. Today's the 20th of January, 2013. It is Presidential Inauguration Day. It is 2 days until Scott Harriet's birthday and my daughter's birthday.
Wow. See, it all ties in.
It's coincidental.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
Ironic because your son's birthday is my birthday. So your two children share birth dates.
This was meant to be.
And you're the main host of the show. In a sense, analogically, we're kind of the children. It's very...
It's like we're all your children.
It's creepy as hell now.
It's almost as though Melba Ketchum designed the show.
I'm freaked out. I gotta go. So anyway, it's the 20th. Oh, also, and today is the what is it? What do they call this? Like divisional championship in the NFL? What is today?
Today is NFC and AFC championship games. The winners of each game go to the Super Bowl.
Correct. So we got that going today. And actually, that's kind of how we're going to stop today because I want to watch the 49ers advance.
I'm pulling for them too, even though it looks like they may have a little emotional trouble. What with the the Crabtree allegations.
So we'll see what happens. And of course, if you're listening to this 6 months from now, none of this makes any difference because you know who won, you know what happened, and we just sound like we're... So who you're rooting for? Oh, well, we could do like at the end of the show, remember, we could do like Super Bowl picks.
Yeah.
Because that's in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, that'd be good.
So we could put ourselves out there on that.
You want to do it now?
No.
To get out of the way?
No, got to give people something to look forward to.
Oh.
A reason to listen to the whole show.
Because the show's going to be crap.
I got a message from Paul, and he is without good internet, so I think we don't have... This is it. Just the three of us today.
All right. So it'll be a fast...
That's fine, because he would spend most of the show bagging on American football anyways.
Probably, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And how it's not real. And
it's not rugby, right, so it's not real.
They wear pads, and and there's medical attention there if anyone gets injured.
Yeah.
I got you.
Okay. So how you guys been? First show of 2013 for us.
Yes. When did we do the last one? When was the last air?
It's been about a month, hasn't it?
Yeah. Seems longer. Of course, the holidays kind of stretch everything out.
Yeah.
Let me
check that. You think I would know these things, but I don't. That sounded like a line from Finding Nemo. You think you can do these things, but... Anyway. I have children.
Yeah.
The last episode was... this is number 45, by the way. The last episode was the 16th of September. I'm sorry, December. So, yeah, it's been just over a month. And you know, a lot actually happened.
Yeah,
it's been crazy.
It has been crazy. In fact, I think this Daisy thing was born, lived, and died in that entire period of time between our last show and this one.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to quote Sam actually just briefly before we go into this, because we have our backstage little chat thing. We talk in between shows.
That's a secret. I think Sam, but now you've told everyone. Fine,
Sam. Who's gonna? Can they find it? They don't know.
You don't talk about Fight Club.
Exactly. But I like the way Sam put this. He goes, "Quote: There's so much retardation going on right now. It's going to be hard to keep it tight and within any kind of reasonable time frame if we don't watch it." Referring to this show, I think that is one of the more pithier things I've ever read on the BFS back, and it's true. And I'm saddened to speculate that I think this retardation may in fact accelerate over the next year or so, given the popularity of Finding Bigfoot and subsequent spinoffs.
Go ahead, Sam.
Well, all I was going to say is the bar is definitely being raised. I mean, if you look at just everything that's happened in the time since the last show that we did, it's a lot of stuff, and it's mostly a lot of nonsense stuff.
Yeah.
4, 5, 6 years ago, these... clusterfucks, for lack of a better word. They only came along once in a while. You know, you had to wait for the next big hoax to come along. you know, it just, but now, I mean, it's like Bigfoot has ADD. You know, everything is shiny. Ooh, look at this. Ooh, look at this. And I don't know. I kind of pine for those days when there was all that anticipation waiting to see what was going to be the next big three-ring circus. Now it seems like we, you know, live in the middle of one.
Yeah, it's finding Bigfoot, dude. If you had to find one thing,
not
the popular
Bigfoot.
Well, I mean, what I mean is, although I'm not a big fan of the show, what I mean is that really? That did you know that?
I'm not sure I've heard that before. Maybe
no,
should,
it's that the popularity of it, and also kind of the lack of scientific rigor, as it were, is kind of, hey, well, that's on TV. They don't have to be particularly bright to do anything. I think that's inspiring a lot of people, a lot of competitive yeehaws, like.
It's possible that the interest level, that when these things happen, they're much more visible because of the interest in the subject now is sort of at a high point, yeah. Not an all-time high. I think in the 70s it was still bigger, but, you know, sort of at a high point for the last several decades. But, you know, this guy, Ed Smith, he's been around for several years. He's been apparently yanking chains for quite a while now.
So has that been the rap on him? Because I don't remember hearing his name before, and I haven't.
Yeah. He's been around for a while. And this is not the first big announcement that has come from him. This is just the first one that's really kind of gone full circle. And
Sam, could you just, for our listeners who don't have their finger on the very pulse of Bigfoot, of the Sasquatchery, could you just give us sort of a brief summation of the Daisy in a Box fiasco?
Daisy in a Box.
Okay. Well, you have to go back. You have to go back a little bit
to 1968.
Into the history. Yes, 1968.
Bob Gimlin was burning the coast.
I was born a poor black child. Ed Smith came on the scene really via the MABRC?
MABRC.
Yes, okay, yeah. As part of a group that he called the Original Six. Now, there were several claims that came out of them, evidence-related claims, things that they had, new things they were doing. I'll leave it to the listeners to go back and find that out for themselves. It's a pretty tangled pile of crap. But anyways, so at some point... Ed Smith was bought out of the Original Six, this is the narrative. I'm just repeating what I've read and been told. So he was bought out of
they
this
bought
group.
His shares.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah. He, in turn, signed a no compete clause with them.
Jeez.
And was not supposed to conduct any kind of Bigfoot research, even recreationally.
All right.
As opposed to professionally,
I'm not spinning any of this. I mean, this is
you're just a reporter.
I'm just a reporter.
Are you wearing a hat that says press on it right now?
No, I'm actually wearing one that says Field and Stream. Cool. But anyways, so he's bought out, and this Original Six, they reform themselves like Voltron, and to this group called Quantra. Well. One day, Ed is sitting at home, and he gets a text message or email. I can't remember. It was an email saying in super secret military jargon lingo that they had Daisy in the box. And apparently, this was their code word or their code language for Sasquatch capture.
Okay.
And capture. Started to – yes, capture. They okay. had they had literally captured a living, breathing Sasquatch. And it pretty much just very quickly spun out from there. He was the go-between, even though he was not part of the group, and he wasn't supposed to have this information, but it got accidentally leaked to him anyways. And there was going to be a big powwow with Jeff Meldrum and Melissa Hovey and others.
Kathy Strain. They'd actually reached out to Kathy Strain, and then there was supposed to flyer to – what were they called? Mm-hmm. They were called
the Bridge Group.
They were going to be the outside experts to verify this.
And then that got canceled, and then immediately afterward, somebody flushed the toilet because the whole thing just was gone. The MABRC came out, and they made a statement and basically said that he was full of crap, which, I mean, if you hadn't already figured that out anyways, you were being generous.
But this went on
for
several weeks. What I don't understand, and because, and maybe it's because I purposely try not to get myself too deep into this stuff, even though I have a show about this crap, right? Like, how could this go on for so long before somebody finally said this is crap? It can't all be Ed Smith, right? Other people just sort of let this thing go. Is that not true? Is it all Ed?
Finding Bigfoot. I blame them.
Shut
okay.
Up.
Well, you know, I really think that's what the discussion is now. Was this really one guy who was just capable of spinning these really great, convincing yarns? Or was it a combination of his storytelling, other people's credulity, other people's willingness to suspend disbelief, whatever have you? For me, it's really hard to say that this guy alone carries the full weight of this. Because just on the very surface of his story, you should be able to look at it and say, bullshit.
Right.
I mean,
just the idea that someone's going to catch a Bigfoot and put him in a box is, I mean, even a cage. I'm sorry, not a box. But, you know, just the idea that you're going to be able to do a live capture of an animal like this is ridiculous, but whatever.
Right. Well, apparently they have.
Might as well go ahead and blow its brains out.
A bunch of military cool guys and.
Oh, they have like
secret
the equipment,
squirrels
right?
And. Yeah.
Bazooka.
Bazooka. See, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I think that's really the discussion. Is it's not what Ed Smith did, because what Ed Smith did was a Bush League hoax. There have been much better attempts out there. Rick Dyer did a better job with the Georgia Freezer hoax.
Well, it went on longer, didn't it?
Yeah, it went on longer, and he sucked more people into it.
Right.
And, you know, he was able to get a lot more mileage out of it. I mean, this literally was a flash in the pan. So I don't think the discussion is the hoax. I think the discussion is how did someone do such a crappy job at a hoax and still manage to get as much mileage as he did out of it.
Right. And from what I understand now, Ed Smith has come right out, said he's a hoaxer. He's been yanking these guys' chains for quite a while now. I mean, he's basically just come clean completely. Is that true?
It's Bullet Maker 2.0. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's very similar. I shouldn't say it's almost exactly the same, but it's very similar to the situation with the guy that went by the moniker Bullet Maker. Uh-huh. He was affiliated with the MABRC for a long time. They defended him. They did a lot of research at his property. And then something happened, whatever it was. And now you have him saying that, yeah, he was hoaxing these people and, you know, a nice big falling out and a bunch of name calling and hurt feelings and whatnot. So we've been down this road before.
Yeah.
You know what? I think maybe one reason so many people were so into it, I mean, not only the generation of it, but maybe people wanting to believe it was probably true, was all the hope that had been garnered by, you know, by the Melba Ketchum stuff. And again, I'll go back to Finding Bigfoot too. We're in this period of, like, I think a lot of people feel, maybe rightly, maybe not. And even Area X stuff is this, like, yeah, we're closer. So when you hear any tantalizing, right, it's actually a ripe period for a hoaxer to come in with something because people are chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
For, you know.
Well, I think it's been, I think if you go back and read stuff that was written in the 70s, you know, I think it's always been the case that people who are really into this have felt that we were on the verge of a great discovery at every moment between 1967 and today. And I think that I think you're right. I think there is a lot of hope. I think there's a lot of expectation that we seem to be on the verge of things, but of something big. But I guess if you're on of the more skeptical nature, and anyone in this field who isn't skeptical needs to find a new hobby. But if you're sort of like maybe on the verge of being a scoffdick, you're going to look at something like this and then you're going to draw a parallel to things like Area X or whatever. And you're going to go, well, all these things turn out to be bullshit. So chances are this one is too. And that's just a problem for people who aren't trying to peddle bullshit.
You know, and I'm sure that's exactly what there were parallels before gorillas were discovered and orangutans. I mean, not to the, to the extent now, you know, because we have the internet and whatnot. But as far as
it was on the Telegraph back then.
Yeah, you know,
idiot with a beep. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Adrian Hieronymus Fan wearing pelts.
Pelts.
Is Adrian an old enough name?
Wearing pelts.
wearing pelts. Lives three doors down. Why am I talking in a high voice for some reason?
No idea. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, because I think, it's a very exciting time. And when people get excited about stuff, reason tends to get a little pushed to the back seat. Not necessarily. They're not mutually exclusive.
No.
But there is that tendency within humans. We get excited about something and logic kind of falls to the side.
You know, and so
you're saying it's Bigfoot hysteria, like Beatlemania.
Kind of, yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. It's Bigfoot mania.
Squatchamania.
Squatchamania.
Well, and when you hear things like this, when they first come out, you're like, well, you know, gosh, I really hope it's true because that would be fantastic, but it's probably not. And I remember with the Rick Dreyer thing was the same way. It was like there was so much. And I think you're right, Sam, that the Bigfoot in the freezer thing was much bigger. Well, I mean, hell, there was a press conference on CNN, right? You didn't get that from Daisy in a Box. But I think that there was such hope. Again, we get back to that hope that people who are in this field want the, you know, solution, whatever it is, to happen so badly. Unfortunately, like an abused person,
it's like an abusive relationship.
You're just looking for
it's
the
just
way
like,
out. At
it's
this
like
point.
The it's like the geek.
It's like Vietnam. You're just looking for an honorable way out, right? That's all you're looking for. You can't do a full retreat. You have to sort of say, "Well, there you go. Okay, I'm done. I'm out of here."
Well, I think for some people, I think for some people it really is like an abusive relationship. You know, you keep hanging on after all those times that you've gotten knocked down and beat around. You keep hanging on, you know, hoping that it's going to get better.
Right.
Or you've had a glimpse of it being better. You know, I mean, take, for instance, somebody who had a sighting. You know, they come into this thing full of, oh, my God, you know, it's real. Wow. Just full of excitement and enthusiasm. And vigor, and then
vim.
You start
forgetting getting vim.
Well, some have vim, some have vigor.
Pith and vinegar. But no, you know, you come into this full of good thoughts and hope, and then slowly it gets killed out of you by all of these charlatans and chain yankers.
And you realize once you get in there that so many of the people who are into this are crazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Crazy. In fact, somebody said that.
It is true.
On our Facebook thread when we asked people for...
Yeah,
Gareth Cummins wanted to know, why are 99% of the quote-unquote famous people in Bigfoot research batshit crazy? I would say that 99% of the... Because they're crazy, because they look for attention. That's their whole reason for doing this is because they want attention. I think there's a whole lot of people that aren't famous who don't look for as much attention that aren't crazy.
No. Well, you know, actually, what I mean? Seriously, what would you, to put a realistic percentage on
crazy,
crazy or just you know, not well educated or just not?
Things. You can be not well educated, but still have
true
some
or maybe
sense.
Not well versed in the scientific method. For example, people who just they jump to conclusions. They want it. They're getting feelings. It's this new agey vibe. God is designated me as
well.
The
no,
big,
I would say pure crazy 20%.
Yeah,
that's,
pure
that's,
crazy,
and then maybe 40%.
Well, misguided, misdirected, misunderstanding of how
illogical
in certain cases, but everyone's illogical about their own problem. I mean, everyone's got a blind spot somewhere, but yeah, I would say that maybe
people tend to be the least logical about the things that they're the most emotionally attached
exactly
to
right.
as well.
That's a very good point.
So the more your heart is into this, the less likely your head is going to be.
Right. And that's actually a huge challenge for someone who is really into it, who actually does the boots on the ground kind of stuff and has come to the point where they're confident that these things exist and they know where they exist and they sort of have an idea of how they exist. it's sort of a challenge trying not to get sort of like sucked into the vortex, right?
It is, and you really need somebody there to give you a reality check
right.
every now and then.
Right.
I mean, I know I've been susceptible to it, and
yeah.
And it's like you said, you know, the more confident you become in your conviction that these things are real, the more you need somebody there right beside you to sort of be that filter and to say, hey, well, you know, let me give you an alternate idea or let me give you yeah. another possibility.
Yeah.
Because.
And it's also the case that the more confident you get, the more crazy you sound to people who aren't confident.
You know? Well, I think this is you who I've totally thought of when you're describing this is Moneymaker is like that.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt that he believes.
Absolutely.
And there's no doubt that Matt is basically a smart guy, but
right.
somewhere down the line he crossed over.
Yeah.
And his enthusiasm has overshadowed his logic. And plus, you know, wanting to be famous or make money or whatever with the statements that he makes on the show that are just so flat-faced, unscientific,
right.
and not back-upable.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess he's sort of the poster child for what we're talking about.
He's the literal translation of the king has no clothes, as
yeah.
seen through the filter of squashdom.
Right.
Thanks for that image.
Well, here's a related question. Thomas Kelly Tate, I guess I'm spelling that. I don't know how you say this guy's last name. He's got a dash in it. If Matt Moneymaker had an ice cream flavor, what would it be?
Bullshit brownie. I don't know.
Monkey butt.
No, that would be Biscardi would be bullshit. Yeah, Moneymaker again. I've talked about this before. He's not like Biscardi in the sense, but Biscardi is a straight con man. I think the evidence for that is overwhelming.
Right.
Moneymaker is kind of a quasi con man in a sense because he knows at a time he's saying stuff that he has no way to back up scientifically. He does genuinely believe. And he's kind of a hypester. I think that's the word that defines Moneymaker, where he hypes things. Mm. And the definition of hype is meaning not being truthful. Part of that is that it's
not being unhyped.
Not being unhyped, and yet he is the head of the only scientific organization involved in the Sasquatch phenomena. So it's this blatant contradiction that lives in that sad, confused noggin of his. And he has to sit in a truck with Bobo. So he's
Bobo's
got...
a good guy. Bobo's a,
Bobo's
guy.
A good guy. I like
actually, that. Anyway. Yeah. All right. So the other related question to this before we get entirely off Daisy, Mike Rideout wants to know, will Mente Teo begin an online relationship with Daisy? I think that's clearly what's going to happen next. That's the only logical thing that can happen.
Yeah, I think it already did happen. I think they're...
Oh, did we miss that?
No.
So
yeah.
Fast now,
yeah,
please.
It was the next... Yeah, we were talking about that before we started taping today. That is such a freaky story. By the time anybody hears this, whatever. But read the whole details of that Mente Teo. It is a bona fide, crazy ass story.
It's a great narrative though for showing just how off the wall crazy a seemingly normal person or situation can be.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, well, that couldn't be a hoax because I don't see how they could have hoaxed it. Or what would the motivation be for a person to hoax this? I can't imagine what their motivation would be. Well, listen up, Slick. Just because you can't imagine it or you can't envision it doesn't mean somebody else can't or that they're not crazy enough to do it in the first place.
And stop calling me Slick.
Yeah. Or if people are – I was saying this to Brian earlier is – people want to look at this, it's got to be an either or. Oh, he was in on it from the beginning or he's a total victim. Whereas I think from everything I've read, I think the probable truth is actually a mix of the two. I believe he probably wasn't in on it at the beginning, but kind of got caught up in it. And maybe that whole thing about the Heisman sympathy thing kind of after that Tui Sopo kid, or he figured out it was that kid. Because there's no way you're going to convince me that this guy for over a year did not – at the very least, strongly suspect that he was having the wool pulled over his eyes because he just said too many things. And he did admit the other day that he did lie about meeting her or that is, you know, whatever. So I don't think he created it. I think this Tui Sopo kid did, but then he kind of went along with it.
Realized that he could get some mileage out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's going to result in him now going in the third round instead of the first round, because they're going to go, he's a little cuckoo.
Go on, it's going to be attached to him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll never get away from it.
Yeah. But I hope he finds a really nice wife in the future that actually does exist.
Maybe he wants, you know, a fake wife. There's some advantages I could see to that.
I think maybe he knew it was the guy Tui Sopo the whole time, if you know what I mean. Little
Yeah, you never know. Oh, you know what? That was something else, a person that I work with, because we were talking about this beforehand, but somebody else that, I don't remember where I heard this, I think it was somebody that I worked with said this, that maybe, and this is how bad rumors start, but maybe he was okay with this fake girlfriend because he was using her to hide.
He knew it was
hide.
A dude.
Yeah, well, yes. maybe he's into dudes, and, you know, so this fake girlfriend was a great, you know, kind of thing to...
You never know.
You never know. It's true. The world's a crazy place. All right, so... what do you guys want to talk about next? We got a whole bunch of stuff on this page. Tons of stuff. More than we'll ever be able to do.
Jeez, what are we looking at here? Anything interesting you guys are planning for the coming? Did you talk about that last time, Brian, as far as the Area X plans, besides trying to...
Well, we're going to put in a shopping mall. We're thinking that maybe awesome. A themed, maybe like a mini golf. You know, sort nice. Of a squatch golf kind of thing.
You'd have a That'll little chapel in. For squatch weddings. Yeah.
Exactly. A guy in a Bigfoot suit is officiating for you, if that's what you, what you want.
I actually do have a question because I don't know what they're referring to, but I think two people referred to it. What is the Bobo boomerang incident?
Oh, well, I'm not caught up on the show. I didn't watch it last week. But the week before that, there was the big two-hour Australia thing. So they were playing around with I think Matt threw the boomerang on a beach and it hit Bobo in the ankle and like he bled. I mean, he really hit him with this thing. And this thing is a serious hunting thing because, it cut open his ankle and he was bleeding. And it was, you know, Bobo just Bobo. He's like, yeah, whatever, I'll get over it. But
and let me guess, I'm sure they found some credible evidence of a Yowie existing. On the show, I mean, close, but yet it escaped at the last minute.
I think that they talked to some interesting witnesses, and then they went out, and it's hard to know the way they edit this show, and I only have seen it the one time, and it was a couple of weeks ago, but Cliff seemed to have some interesting things going on. He was getting some responses and some sounds, and, you know, he was very excited, but it's hard to know really how, you know, worthy that was, just because of the way they edit the show. It was nice to see them kind of break out of their box a little bit because, you know, they were in another country and it was 2 hours, so it was a little more in depth. So it was of the shows recently, it was probably one of the better ones. Again, I haven't seen last week's, but it was just because they were in a new place and they were doing new things. It's awesome looking territory. I mean, I would love to go there and hang out.
It's like when the Bradys went to Hawaii.
It's exactly it, yeah. And except nobody found a tiki in a cave. Other than that, it's exactly the same. So which of the Bradys would they be? Who would be? Never mind. Okay. Let's see.
What about Fred Emmers? I think we talked about this briefly, his trained bird concept for finding a Sasquatch.
Oh, well, yeah. Didn't he give this to us in a message?
Yeah. Actually, I got mine from Carrier Pigeon.
His... I'm going to paraphrase. I mean, his idea that you could use birds to alert to things that you can't see, but birds being higher in the sky could, I think that seems reasonable. I just think that you've got to have the bird and, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into that.
You've got to be Harvey Birdman.
And how do you train? I mean, what do you have a guy in a gorilla costume first that the bird gets familiar with that form?
That's a good question.
How do you find a Sasquatch? First, get a Sasquatch. Get the bird familiar with the Sasquatch. Let the Sasquatch go.
The only problem with this plan is the first thing you need to do is find yourself a Bigfoot.
Exactly.
I'm trying to find his message. Here it is. Waiting for the internet. You can go get yourself. His idea was that he was at the Texas State Fair where he saw an amazing array of trained birds at the Birds of the World show. And he had his own experience training a baby crow when he was 15.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Sorry.
It says it occurred to him that you could train a crow or possibly even a raptor could be used to track down a Bigfoot. He said his own pet crow used to follow him through the woods every weekend while he was hunting for rabbits and squirrels. He'd sit in the branch and would always stay about 10 or 20 yards away and just fly closer every time I got too far ahead. So he's saying that theoretically you could train a bird, maybe a crow or an owl or a hawk or something like that to, and he actually says, strap a micro GPS tracker, which I guess those are real, and then train the bird to find and follow a guy that's hiding while dressed up in a Bigfoot suit. You know, and once the bird got used to finding the hoaxer, then you would take him out to a hot spot and let him go. I don't know. I've heard crazier things, right?
Yeah. I mean,
chimps attached to tigers comes to mind.
With lasers on their heads.
I think they were epoxied to the tigers. So I don't think it's a bad idea. I think the problem is you got to have a guy in a suit willing to hang out in the woods with you for a really long time and run away from this crow. And you got to have a crow that you can train. And none of these things are impossible. The micro GPS tracker, I don't know if that's real or not. He's got a link to something that you could use. But
now, see, if I ever do another Bigfoot-related film, that would be a good thing.
You got to talk to
actually, like, do it seriously, but it has so much inherent comedy in it. Just somebody, you know, going out there, seeing, get the bird. The guy's sweating his ass off in the suit, and maybe he gets attacked by a bunch of birds. That would be great.
My question is... Again, some of this is based on my own experience and what I believe to be true, but what happens when the bird finds the Bigfoot, right? What are you going to do? And that's assuming the bird finds the Bigfoot and you'll be in a spot where you can
do something about it.
See it, right? What is it are you going to try to take a picture of it? Are you going to try to film it? Are you going to try to make friends with it? Are you going to try to shoot it? Are you going to try to put it in a cage? I mean, what's the...
Yeah, it would have to have some kind of visual idea. You know, some kind of small camera on the bird as well to corroborate. Because you wouldn't want to
But here's what would happen. You would come out and say, look, I got this trained bird who got a picture of a Bigfoot. And people say, well, how did you train your bird to do that? And you say, well, I had my buddy Norm out there in the Bigfoot suit running around in the woods for a couple of years. And we trained him. Like, well, how do I know that thing that you videotaped from your bird's head
isn't Norm
in a Bigfoot suit? And you're back to the problem of Roger Patterson. And no one believes you, and you just spent like 4 years and a whole lot of time filming something that most people are going to just throw away and ignore.
Yeah. This is where we got to get. Now, this leads to another topic somebody had put down. And I don't know if you read about this, Brian, but and I don't know what the range on these things.
Oh, this is Vincent Sasso?
Vincent Sasso.
Sounds like
he was great in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, he's like Kaiser Sose. Please take all the time to thoroughly explain why you and the TBRC in Area X, if you already took shots or believe you may have shot a wood ape, can't put money into these.
Yes. Explain that to us.
He's got he's jabbing his virtual finger into my chest right now. Rather than more cameras, don't buy any more cameras. He wants us to buy CO2 rifles. Right.
Yeah.
And then you could load them up with DNA biopsy darts, and there you go, done.
What's the range on those? I mean, I imagine they're better and better. Maybe you probably have to be within. You could probably do it at 50 yards.
So these things are expensive. The rifle that he links to is $2,000. Right, that's pretty expensive. And so he says, why do you buy more cameras? Why don't you buy one of these? Well, we could buy like a lot of cameras. We get like 3 or 4 cameras for the price of this one rifle. And I'm not saying we're buying a lot of cameras anymore or not the same kind that we've been buying, but I'm just saying it's $2,000. So,
but you'd have that problem. But then you'd have the problem. I mean, again, short of killing one, because I don't know if you know this or not, I'm against killing one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should have a conversation about that.
If you, but I just say, I mean, it would be really friggin'. Oh, and the thing is that you could equip this gun with a small video device on it. So whatever you did shoot, I mean, again, it would just be corroborating. It wouldn't be verification. But if you could get something,
probably
a DNA
it would be a black blur if you saw anything. So what I'm saying is these things are designed for close quarters use. They're designed for maybe tagging an animal in a pen. They're used by, you know, dog catchers, things like that. The environment that we're in, there's a lot of foliage in the way. They don't have the same muzzle velocity as like an actual rifle. They're not going to go as far. They're not going to be as accurate from what we understand.
But they're kinder.
What I'm saying is you put yourself into this spot at great expense and trouble.
Yeah.
And you want to be in the in a scenario where you have the highest degree of success. And while, yeah, you could hit one of these things with a dart, and again, it isn't like, you know, these, when you get a biopsy, a DNA biopsy, it's ripping a chunk of flesh out of this thing. You don't know what's going to happen. That poor bastard could go get an infection and die behind a rock. All I'm saying is it's entirely possible.
That's a bad argument.
But what I'm saying is you put yourself out there at great expense and trouble, and you try to get yourself in a position where you have an opportunity. And I think you want to be in, you want to basically stack the odds in as much your favor as possible. And while this is certainly something that someone could do, it's just not a priority for us because we just don't believe. And we've talked about it. We've explored these things. We've looked at them. They're just not a plausible solution for us for a variety of reasons, because of the environment, because of the types of interactions that we have, if we have them, and because of just limitations in the technology.
So go ahead and kill one then, because you guys are inconvenienced. Fine.
It's all about inconvenience. Yeah, well, that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, I think I actually think
you know,
I'm
we're
gonna
out
guess,
there like 15,
the
almost
20
technology minutes.
Technology like this is going to get better. I think it's. I mean, something where either the range of it will increase, coupled with DNA identification, like Disatel. Todd Disatel was talking when we interviewed him that. Getting unknown DNA will become more and more through time, be able to be used.
I'm not verifying
an animal.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the concept is a bad one. I'm not saying that no one should try this. I'm saying, let's say we wanted to outfit the TBRC, right? Quote unquote outfit. You would probably need like four of these things. You'd need four of these rifles. That's $8,000, right? Not even counting the DNA darts. And so what I'm saying is it's an impractical solution for us. If someone wanted to donate $8,000 with the specific instruction that we buy for these rifles and the DNA darts, sure, we'd do that. And then some guys would have real guns and some guys would have these DNA dart guns. But I'm saying that there's no the TBRC today, we do not have the resources, we do not have the inclination to go to the effort of trying to be in a position where you can solve this problem and then find yourself hitting, you know, a couple of leaves and your dart just falls to the ground and nothing happens. It just seems like it's not a solution that we're interested in exploring.
Tell that to the family of the Sasquatch.
Yeah. Well, there's a page on this website where they're referencing the darting of two lions, and they say that it was done at a range of 15 meters. So there you go.
45 feet.
Yeah. The lions were attracted to a call-up site using dead impala bait and various prey species distress calls.
Right.
So there you go. Problem solved.
I think an interesting device that could be designed, and probably people have thought about this, maybe there is even something like this, but I think the one thing you'd have to do is where you put it. The probability of a human going in front of it would be like super small, is you'd have a photographic machine, something, you know, some kind of device.
We call those
and
cameras.
Then out of that, or some kind of, you bait it or whatever, that something got close enough. Uh-huh. And if the recognition, you have, you know, recognition software in that picks up a form, like it's not going to hit this, it's not going to hit that. But if it's in this general form, it would then shoot out like a DNA dart, a retractable thing. It would have to be get really close, obviously. But at least, you know, you're not trying to kill it. The odds of it being a human are minimal. Even if it was a human, they'd just be getting a thwack in the shoulder. You know,
dart in the ass.
Dart in the ass. Come on. We're not going to blow one away. Think outside the box, you lazy bastards. Come on.
You see, I think that's kind of the problem, is I think that this thing has become, it's gone on long enough to where it is driving people to think up the most batshit crazy ideas of how to solve it. And it's really not necessary. All you need is the time and the manpower and the money. Right. And that's it. You don't need trained birds. Nope. You don't need, you know, as of yet undesigned photographic algorithms that can identify a hairy, you know, upright biped.
Yeah, but you still, for people like me and others, because I'm not alone in this.
No,
you still, you know, I'm not. But still part of the equation, which you guys are having a hard time saying, is that you want to kill one, you know, and that, I think that's a problem for a lot of people. It's just not, if you, you know, to say it's, first of all, it's not impossible. And I know you guys would support if there was a way that verification could happen.
I completely reject your characterization that we, quote, want to kill one, unquote. I can tell you for a fact that nobody wants to kill one. If we found a dead one laying on the road, we would take it in and we would be perfectly satisfied. If we could find some other way, if that little tiny hair that we're still waiting on, if that little tiny hair says, "Hey, look, this is novel DNA. This is novel DNA that, because we're really smart with DNA nowadays, gives us some sort of conclusive evidence that these things exist," we would be satisfied. If somebody else hit one with their truck by accident, we would be satisfied. We're only doing the work that biologists do when they're trying to establish a population of a new animal. This is not bloodlust. This isn't about murder.
Dude, I never said
hunting.
It was bloodlust.
You're saying admit.
No, hold on. No. You're mischaracterizing what I'm saying. No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying you have bloodlust. But the point is, literally, you want to kill one. You think that's the easiest way to do it.
It's
true or false?
Not the easiest. There's nothing easy about what we're doing.
I want to club one down like a baby seal. All right. I'll say.
As long as you eat it. As long as you eat it.
As long as I
don't want to be mischaracterized.
I want to know what's easy about what the TBRC is doing. You know, we're spending thousands of man hours going out into very difficult conditions for months.
I'm not saying it's not hard. I'm saying, though, killing one is the easiest way.
If it was easy, it would have been done.
Now, you're dodging the issue. Totally.
I'm not dodging
any
issue.
Yes, you are.
What issue am I dodging?
All I'm saying is you want to kill one because it's the easiest way. And I'm not saying due to bloodlust or whatever.
A, it's not easy. B, it's conclusive.
I'm not saying
it's
easy.
Conclusive.
You keep dodging it, dude. The easiest.
I'm dodging nothing. The listeners can judge. If they think I'm dodging, they can see on the Facebook page.
Totally
when we post
dodging.
This, Brian, you were dodging. I'm not dodging anything. It's not easy. We don't want to kill one. We think that's how it has to happen.
Not in a bloodlust way, but you're actively pursuing verifying these animals by killing one. True or false?
True.
Okay. Then you want to kill one.
We want to establish and protect the animal. And there's all kinds of ways that might happen. The most effective way would be bringing in a specimen. That's the way that it would happen.
And again, like you said, if a guy hit one with a truck, you'd be happy. And I would be too. And
I'd
hoping
be happy.
That's the way.
It doesn't matter to me or anyone in the TBRC where it comes from. We don't have to be the ones to do it.
Oh, I know that. I know that. I'm just saying if you think, which I think you do, you would prefer that one wasn't killed, then I would say, why don't you put effort into those solutions instead of going with the easier one? That's
again,
all I'm saying.
Again, I reject.
I'm not saying it's easy. Dude, you're mischaracterizing what I'm saying.
You're saying that
the easiest.
What
it's a matter of degree.
It's
not
about
black or white.
It's about getting the job done. It's about what is the most effective way of doing this, because we don't know. I saw this on the BFF the other day. Again, this idea that we don't need to do anything for them because they've done a great job of protecting themselves all these years, and you know, the best thing we should do is just leave them alone. We don't know. We don't know what their population numbers are now. We don't know what they were 10 or 20 years ago or where they're heading. We have no idea. There's nothing being done to protect these animals. And if they're like every other large omnivore animal in North America, they're under stress. So we could continue to dick around for the next 20 years and look for a dead one or try to find a bone or like try to get a picture that no one's going to believe and then potentially watch them just go extinct. Or we can get to the point where we've established them and actual conversations can happen among serious people about trying to protect where they live and them as an animal. That is the goal of the TBRC. And if the way that you get there means that you have to collect a specimen, the way that biologists have worked for time immemorial, then that's what it means. That's our position. Now, there's nothing easy about what we're doing. Not a thing.
I never said that. So that, I mean, it's a straw man argument. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it is the easiest. That's all.
I think getting a picture would be easier than shooting one.
But it wouldn't be proof, as we all agree.
No, not at all.
No. Let's go to a clip. There's Bob Gimlin. I'm going to work, after this show, I'm going to work on a DNA dart that shoots out of a camera and will not hit a human in the ass.
If you knew how to make, like, you know, one of these electrical engineer guys who knew how to make a circuit board, I'm sure it could be designed. I don't know about the algorithm that would only fire at Bigfoot and not at people. I'm not sure about that.
What about you? I know we've talked about this briefly, but if there was, and again, it wouldn't be the easiest thing, but if a sophisticated trap was gotten where you had one, you could take plenty of samples.
Yeah.
You could take, you know, up close video, like, you know, one of the huge, you know, like cargo net type thing. I mean, that's just something generally. But if you got one up in there, you were like able to give it, you know, a moderate tranquilizer, something you probably wouldn't kill it. Even if it enraged it, it's still within this giant cargo net or whatever. You videotape that, even though that would, but it would be corroborative with the hair samples, blood samples. And for more knowledge based, you could then put a tracking device in it, and you would learn so much more about the animal than just killing one. I mean, if
not,
that
all, not to mention that you could get its autograph and short bio.
Yeah.
While you're at it.
I know, Sam, I know you're hopeless because you're a hunter, but I know Brian.
Okay, wait. The whole time I was listening to you two have your little tiff.
It's the only thing we, you know, Brian and I only disagree on. I love Brian too. We only disagree on two things that I know. Politically, we're almost exactly the same. Two things we disagree on: the PGF and the kill or no kill. Although, yeah. I mean, Brian's not against verification.
I think if we hung out in a bar long enough, we could find more than just those two things.
But generally, in the realm of Bigfoot, anyway.
Well,
go ahead.
Let me give you the hunter's perspective. Okay,
you bloodthirsty hunter.
Yes, I'm a bloodthirsty hunter,
bastard,
and I do want to bludgeon a Sasquatch down like a baby seal. No,
as long as you eat it.
This is the way that I was raised, and this is what I hold to be true, and this is what I will teach my children when they're old enough to grasp the concept of hunting. There is a lot of pleasure in going out there. There's no doubt. I'm not going to deny any of that. But the pleasure that you derive is not from taking a life. And I was raised that when you kill an animal, you should feel remorse. And the day that you don't feel remorse for taking that animal's life, you need to quit, because you've stopped being a hunter and you've become a killer. And that's what I believe. And like Brian was saying, and I could sympathize with him, he doesn't want to take that animal's life. He's taking that animal's life out of a necessity for a greater good. And as a hunter, that's how I feel as well. Right. I take that animal's life for a purpose and for a reason. I don't draw joy in doing it. And there's always a certain amount of remorse that comes from it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I have fulfilled a role in the chain of life, so to speak, and I've done something for a greater good. And well, you know, in my case, it's helping to control, you know, animal populations, putting food in my family's table.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And I'm not against that, but all I would say back to what you said, I agree with everything except it isn't the only way. If it was the only way, I would completely 100% agree with you guys. Absolutely. But it isn't the only way, which you guys have agreed with. It's the easiest way. It's the most probable way as far as, but to me,
well, it's the most,
again,
effective
the life
way,
of an animal, especially something as sentient as these are, probably very close to us as far as sensitivity, feeling and all, and not as opposed to a microbe or a worm or something, is that we know it's not a necessary thing to kill one. It's not necessary. It's just,
well, I'll say to you the same thing that I've said to other people who have, you know, who have voiced the opinion of, you know, these are the Sasquatch tribe and they need to be left alone and unmolested and everything. If that's true, if that's really how you feel, then your moral responsibility is not to attempt to sway someone else's opinion. Your moral responsibility is to step your game up and find a better solution to the problem. See, if you really think that Sasquatch needs to be verified, but it needs to be verified in a way that does not involve killing one, then what you need to do is you need to go look at biology and say to biologists, show me ways that animals have been documented and added to our knowledge without a specimen being killed. Show me how it's done. And there will be examples. I mean, there's examples of species that have been discovered in bazaars.
Yeah, dead bodies, bones.
Dead bodies. Okay.
And now DNA is a really good example of that.
Right. Yeah. So look at those examples and figure out how, you know, how that was done, and then apply that to Sasquatch and say, okay, this is how we're going to solve it without having to take a life.
Yeah. Well, I think we already know that DNA, if a sample is gathered, it will verify it, according to Disatel and others. So it's not like something we don't know.
Right.
So the question is how to get the DNA.
Exactly. So then you sit around and you start to brainstorm on, well, how do we get the DNA? And that is where it becomes problematic.
Right.
Because you're talking about something that it's almost impossible just to get a glimpse of. Now you want to get a piece of it. How are you going to bridge that huge divide between, you know, the difficulty in just getting close to one, coupled with the fact that you're going to get a piece off of it that you can then take back to a lab and analyze? And I mean, it's easy to sit there and say, well, you know, we can do this, 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 and this. Okay, sure, you can do this, 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 and this with money and research and development.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that can build these contraptions and these wonderful, you know, Rube Goldberg machines that will eventually hoist your Sasquatch up in a cargo net. That's
but it's all. Yeah, no, I know, I agree with what you're saying, but it still comes down to for you guys, it's more important. See,
let me
scientific discovery is more important than the life of one of these things, which, as Brian said, they're probably endangered. We don't know. You kill one, you're affecting a family unit. So that just seems to go out the window when you guys, you're assuming by shooting one, you're necessarily going to be helping the greater population, which probably might happen. But again, you don't have to kill one.
Well,
this rush?
Well,
let me add
to that, though.
Rush?
See, if once.
Well, I mean, that's what people want to do, get something done. They use the easiest method because we got to get it done. We got to.
Right, but see, that's the thing, though. Once it is done, then you will have money and you will have the people who can design these wonderful machines that can help you to capture additional specimens or to better capture them on film and video and better study them. The only way that you're going to get the true creative and material assets of the scientific world focused on this subject is to prove that it exists in the first place. And for someone like myself or for Brian or, you know, the majority of the TBRC, the majority of us out there, we simply do not have access to the money and the people and the technology to accomplish this goal short of putting one on the ground. And in that instance, if that's your only recourse, then what else are you going to do?
That's exactly.
Let it live. Let it live, and let when that stuff is developed.
Let it go extinct. Let it just.
Oh, come on. Yeah, I love. Do you know the absurdity of what you said? Let it go extinct. Oh, we're going to kill one, and it'll affect. Well, we don't know how many there are.
The absurdity of this is how biology's. You know, biologists worry about populations of animals. They don't worry about individual animals. So if exactly. You kill one off so that they don't go extinct. That is a logical, scientifically sound thing to say. Absolutely.
Even though they could be killing one, could actually affect that and whatever social unit it's part of.
I just said biologists worry about populations of animals, not individuals.
Well, so if you don't know how many there are, then...
Well, then it doesn't matter if we kill one, does it?
No, it just matters.
I mean, you're saying, well, if you kill one, that could be like 25% of all the remaining
Bigfoot.
It's just
a bad thing to do, man, to kill something just so you can gain knowledge of something. I just think it's a
This is the root of your argument. This is the root of your argument. Right, it's not necessarily about anything else, except you're saying that it is not a proper sort of exchange to say that an exchange of knowledge for the life of an animal, that's your basic point. And there's nothing I can do to argue
that. Especially when we already know there is another way, even though we don't have that technology yet.
But what I'm saying is everything Sam just said is a much more sort of reasoned and reasonable sounding version of what I'm trying to tell
you. You believe what he believes. That's why it sounds reasonable.
No, he just has that sort of rich Southern drawl, I think, that just makes it all sound so good. This idea of like we're going to have a camera that shoots out darts. I mean, that doesn't exist. We should go out and buy $2,000 CO2 rifles and fill them up with biopsy darts. We don't have $2,000 to spend on a rifle, right?
But that's the core crux of your argument. A lot, or one of the cruxes is, well, you're going to be inconvenienced, so let's just take a life of one.
This is, you know, nothing, it's going to take to time.
Well, let's just shoot one. That is what you're saying. You know, it's more important for you to get that knowledge or be associated with the one who gets it, based on the assumption that they're going extinct or whatever,
that is
then just to let it live.
That is complete bullshit. Total bullshit. This idea now this is my other favorite argument that the people on your side throw out. You just want the fame. You just want to be the guy. That's bullshit. Who wants to be that guy? Because there's going to be a lot of folks out there, even people who don't give a rat's ass about Bigfoot right now because it doesn't exist, right? Let's just say you drag one of these things in and it's going to look like a guy, right? It's going to look like a gorilla, and gorillas look like people. So that person, regardless of what it means scientifically, regardless of what it means to the establishment of the species and the establishment of protection of its environment and everything else, that person is not going to be a hero.
You're
going
to be Joe Dirtbag to be a lot of people. Yeah.
And you're telling me that, oh, I just want the fame of being... Nobody wants that fame. We've already established in the TBRC that we don't want to put that guy's name out there because he's going to be a target.
And yeah, it's probably going to be. I don't know. It just you're trying to save it, but they're killing one. We don't know that much about him. I mean, I'm not saying your ultimate heart isn't like this purely evil plan. It's just like, since you know, and since you guys agree that there is another way it can be verified.
Again,
DNA, we know that.
There's another way to do it, but what you're talking about is...
Or a body being found or whatever.
What is theoretically possible and what is practical are two different things.
Well, exactly. I just don't think practicality trumps the life of a sentient being like this. Well, it's not practical, so let's just kill one.
Then we are never going to see eye to eye on this in a million years.
There's a point where impracticability or impracticalness becomes impossibleness. It would be like if Scott and I were standing on a beach and there's an island on the horizon and I want to get to that island. And there's a tree behind us, and I say, okay, well, I'm going to go over here. I know I can't swim to the island, so I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to chop down this tree, and I'm going to make a dugout canoe, and I'll fashion a couple of paddles, and I'm going to boat over there to the island. And Scott says, well, you shouldn't sacrifice the life of that tree. This is a mighty oak, and it has every right to be here, and it may be the pollinator for, you know, hundreds of other oaks, or maybe it's an endangered tree.
I wouldn't make that argument, by the way, because it doesn't have a central nervous system. But anyway, go ahead.
I know. But what I'm saying, your argument is, don't chop down this tree. Instead, you should build a canoe, and you should make it out of aluminum rods and carbon fiber. Okay, well, that's great. Well, guess what? I have no carbon fiber. I have no aluminum rods. We're standing on a freaking beach, and all I've got is an axe. So you have an idea. You have a viable option that is completely impossible to me. It's not that it's impractical. It's impossible in that situation.
In that situation, but I don't think the analogy is applicable here. It's not impossible to get DNA from a Sasquatch. It's going to be a lot tougher than blowing one away. But again, like you had said, it depends on how much effort any particular individual wants to put into doing it and what do they weigh as values.
The other thing that you don't have insight into is the conversations we have in the TBRC beyond conversations about how we're going to collect a specimen. How different ways of, you know, the things that we've already deployed in the field, ways to capture hair, ways to capture DNA. Could we trap one long enough? I mean, we've talked about a lot of these things. We are not single-minded. You know, we've approached this thing from a variety of angles. And we continue to do so. I think Sam's point is exactly right. It's not a lack of interest or a lack of curiosity or a lack of imagination. It's a lack of having thousands and thousands of dollars laying around and all kinds of resources that we just don't have. So I think his point is exactly right. Even though the tree analogy, you don't like it, I think he's right. Don't kill that tree, because the death of something is not worth whatever the goal is. It's not, the goal is X, and that does not outweigh the death of anything, regardless of what the goal is or what the thing is you're trying to kill. I don't think
the analogy is applicable, because it's not, because again, a tree doesn't have a central nervous system and it doesn't, so it's not a good analogy.
But the point is, what I'm saying is, in his theoretical scenario, what you've established is the value of your goal does not outweigh the value of the thing you have to kill to get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I understand that it was very simplified, and that this is a much more robust and dynamic issue, But really, at the heart of it, it gets to what I was trying to say is, you know, I have a viable way to solve a problem. You do not agree with my method, and you present what to you is an alternative. Unfortunately for me, it's not an alternative because it's not accessible and it's not something that I can actually realize.
Well, then, it still comes back to the notion of money and resources versus the life of something.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
So on a related note, I'm going to try to migrate
steer
us
off this.
On a related note, the TBRC announced last week that we're going to have our 13th conference, Texas Bigfoot Conference.
Show, I think, isn't it? You guys having semi-automatics there?
The 13th Bigfoot Texas Bigfoot Conference. This year will be held in Fort Worth, Texas. We moved it to a big city. Fort Worth is right next door to Dallas, which is a very big city. So there's a lot of people around there. We have this year the leadoff, well, not the leadoff speaker, but sort of the headliner speaker is Josh Gates, the host of television's Destination Truth, which is, I think, a pretty cool show. Scott will dismiss it because it's on television, but I like it.
I've never seen it.
So
it's
anyway,
a little overweight, though.
Well, you know, I think he fluctuates. you know, some of us have that problem. So the reason I bring this up and the reason why I think there's a little bit of a bridge from what we have been talking about to what we will be talking about, is not only because I want people to come to the conference and hear Josh Gates and, oh, also, Kathy Strain will be there talking about, more of her sort of Native American, information that she has. Bill Munns is going to be speaking. So definitely I want to get that for Scott. And we've got Jeff Meldrum and we've got me. And
please ask some hard questions of Bill Munns. Will you do that for me? Please ask some tough questions of that.
Give me some questions. Not right now. Write them down. Send them to me.
Just real quick. So the listeners can hear this. The whole thing about the fact that one of his measurements is based on an approximation made by Bob Gimlin, that he was 100, that Patterson was 100 feet. And that if that fluctuates, if that is off by 5 or 10 feet, then that's going to completely throw the alleged height of the Patterson-Gimlin film subject out of whack, and how it's at base pretty bad science. Okay, that's it.
So that's the last we're going to talk about the PGF. The one when I threw this out on the BFF, the Bigfoot Forums, for those of you who don't know, a member there, someone who's been there for a long time, basically sort of rolled his eyes and threw up his hands and said, why must we live through these sideshows? Where's the science? Why these sideshows?
Is he a vampire?
Sideshow. Yeah, sort of like that. Well, that's the way I hear him in my head. Anyway, and so my point is, and this gets, I think this is the bridge to what we're just talking about. If we don't have things like this, we don't make money. And if we don't make money, we can't spend it on interesting new technology. And if we don't have interesting new technology, then we go nowhere. So
we're going to have to kill one.
We're going to have to kill one of those bastards.
That's the way you do it. Please come by, support us so we don't have to kill one.
Then come to our conference and give us some of your money. So
every dollar we don't raise, a baby Sasquatch dies.
Exactly.
I'll say this. You know, when you guys made the announcement about the lineup, and I saw Josh Gates there, I kind of had some conflicted feelings about his involvement. Partly because he's a great entertainer. Mm-hmm. And his show is entertaining if you take it as entertainment. He does a very good job at what he does.
Yeah.
But he's, I mean, as far as science and legitimizing research, you know, he's about as far from it as you could get. I mean, in that regard, I would have much preferred to see you guys get somebody like Pat Spain, who's somebody that I personally have a lot of respect for and think that, you know, he's done some really good things in the
like
TV venue.
Too. I don't know that his health is working.
Yeah, I know that's an issue. But anyways, so I had those feelings and these thoughts, and then I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, check yourself. Yeah, he's an entertainer, but I mean, really, at the heart of it, isn't that what you are trying to do? I mean, this is not a stuffy, you know, black tie affair where everyone's standing around wearing monocles and, you know, sipping neat scotch and saying quite right and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
Peanut impersonation.
Yes, exactly. While I was twirling a cane. Yeah. No, I mean, this is supposed to be entertaining as well as educating. And in that regard, what better guy could you get than somebody like Josh Gates?
Me.
I mean, because he's got the entertainment side sewed up.
Yeah, and he's popular. I think that everything you say is entirely true. And what I would point to is our last conference. We had Ian Redman there, who is one of the sort of premier naturalists in the world. He's one of the best known primatologists in the world. This guy is
science.
The shit, man. I mean, he's written big old fat books on this subject. He is a world renowned authority. And we had him at our little puny Texas Bigfoot conference, right? And he was amazing. He was fantastically entertaining to listen to. And he knew all kinds of, and he told these amazing stories about elephants that go into caves and are trying to eat salt in the dark. I mean, it was fantastic stuff. And we had the lowest turnout we have ever seen, right? I mean, just being able to like hang out with this guy and listen to him speak is a true amazing experience. And we could not fill, you know, a mobile home with the people who came to this thing.
He's got so much scientific swagger.
Brian, are you admitting that you're lowbrowing the conference this year? Is that
what I'm admitting is we have a variety of sometimes conflicting things we're trying to do. We're trying to educate the public. That's in our mission statement. I would say that's the number one thing that the conference is all about. And all the other things we do over the course of the year that we don't charge money for, like talking to schoolrooms and going to clubs and things like that. We want to educate. We need to raise money. Right, we need to raise money, and if we could bring in Ian Redman again, and he would be just as fascinating and fantastic and wonderful, and we again would barely break even on the entire ordeal. So
he's not American, though.
So what we're trying to do
is took your job.
I think that everything Sam says is correct. In that, you know, is someone like Josh Gates going to advance the scientific understanding or acceptance or anything else? No, probably not. If he would, he probably wouldn't have a TV show and no one would know who he was. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to balance these things out. You know, we're going to do the best we can, and we're going to have the most entertaining, you know, quote unquote show. It really is a show that we can, because at the end of the day, the reason for it is both to educate and also to raise money so we can do our work.
Is he going to be showing any footage of a thermal image of a ghost of a Sasquatch by any chance?
That would be awesome.
No, it would be awesome if he did.
Yeah.
He's taking really cool stuff over there. I mean, you have to, if you watch a show, there's some pretty cool stuff. Yeah.
In fairness, one of the most common criticisms of conferences is that the carousel of people is the same.
Right.
You know, every conference, no matter where it is, you've pretty much got the same people coming in and kind of, you know, rehashing the same stuff over and over. So, you know, to bring somebody new in is a bonus to begin with. And like I said, especially someone who has pretty much mastered his craft in terms of, you know, taking cryptozoology and, you know, other fringe elements and turning them into a successful television show that's entertaining. I mean, what they're in their fifth season now?
It started in 2007, so
I mean, and he's still on the air, still has his show, still doing the same gig. He's obviously doing something right. So kudos to you guys. I'm sure if nothing else, he'll put on a good act.
I hear, is it true that Gimlin has in his will that when he dies that he will allowed to be stuffed and brought to the shows like with his arm waving? I had heard that somewhere.
I've never heard that before. I don't think that's true. I'd be very surprised if that was true.
Little mechanized arm. Hello, ladies.
You know, every now and then that happens where you read that story or hear that blurb on the news where a spouse dies and the other spouse just keeps them in the house.
Yeah.
It'll be something like that. I would love to see a Texas Bigfoot conference where every speaker was someone completely new. I mean, I would punch a hole in my calendar and, you know, break open the piggy bank and make it happen to be there if you could do that. But in this little, you know, in this little sandlot of ours, there's really only so many luminaries who are versed known enough and interesting enough and known enough to be a draw.
Well, and what we need to do is we need to break out of the regular people that come to these things, you know, because As I said, we put on, I think, a pretty good show last time. Not, I was not gonna say last year because we actually skipped a year, but in 2011. And it wasn't very well attended, and it didn't do what we needed it to do from the standpoint of raising funds. And I'm sure it was very educational for the people who were there, but there just weren't enough of them in their seats for us.
You had an awesome poster, too. I've got one framed on my wall.
Oh, yeah, those are good posters.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
I think, you know, part of it, and we've talked about this before, is that we're talking about a phenomenon, about something that is relatively rare. So how much credible new stuff, probability speaking, can there be? You know, it's why we have, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, more and more hypey stuff, more stuff that's probably bullshit. And I think it's hard by the nature of the phenomena.
See,
if you had a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people coming in, it's just like, what are the odds all these people had sightings? Oh, we've heard this guy before, blah, blah. It's just, I mean, I think we have the problem a little bit with the show, too, is because we do talk about similar stuff over and over again, but we're all into it. And I think, our listeners are.
Apparently.
But hopefully. both of them.
If they're still listening. I don't know. They haven't tuned out.
But it's just, again, I think it's because we're in this period where I think it's going to be more prone to hyperbole and craziness and redundancy.
Well, I think since we're on the topic of this specific event, if you come to this event, you'll hear us present on our field work on Operation Persistence in a way, and probably with more detail publicly than we've given up to this point.
And let's be honest. That's what's been carrying the water for this show for 5 episodes now.
No, it's a little more than 5, but maybe like 6. So whether or not that's credible, that's not me to say. That's for you to decide, right? If it's credible, but it's going to be new. It's going to be some things that people have not heard before. It's going to be it's going to be something that is not the same old, and I think that's the best we can do, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's true that there's most of what you're going to hear, especially on the internet with regard to the subject, is going to be people like Ed and Rick Dyer, but that's not what you're going to hear at this conference. And it's only because there just aren't enough people doing serious work, and or the ones who are don't want to tell people about it.
Yeah. But I think you're right. When you're in a realm like this, the entertainment does have to come in, because if there isn't anything particularly new scientifically or whatever, then, you know, at least you can be, if this guy, from what you guys are saying, I think I watched a little clip of him the other day online, seemed like a charming enough chap, that at least you have that. And so who knows what, ideas what like, that'll help, you know.
What I like about Josh Gates specifically, and the reason why I was really in favor of bringing him in, is because he goes to these things, wherever it is, and he looks for some crazy stuff, right? He looks for, cryptids.
Ghost monkeys.
Ghosts. And, he'll look for aliens. Ghosts. I mean, he'll look for anything, right? He will look for any crazy shit. But he goes into this stuff, he's not dismissive of it, even though some of the stuff he looks for is pretty stupid and probably and should be dismissed. But he doesn't, doesn't present himself that way. He goes in with an open mind. He's actually trying to collect some information, but it's a TV show, so there's only certain boundaries that you're able to work in.
Time filler.
Right.
But he's also not a complete credulous either.
Exactly.
I mean, he knows how to poke fun when it needs to be poked.
And what you see then is you get someone who's trying to give whatever phenomenon he's going after a fair shake, right? From the standpoint of someone who's just trying to get to the bottom of it, as opposed to what you see on a show like Finding Bigfoot, which is like, preaching to the choir. This is an entirely different approach to the subject. It's more like the guys on Ghost Hunters, right? That they're already convinced, and they'll tell you all kinds of stuff that they know for a fact. But so I think that what's interesting about Gates is that he approaches it a little more. He's open yet not convinced about anything, and I guess that's the definition of what I think a skeptic should be.
Kind of reminds me of Mythbusters. I mean, they go into each episode and each subject And you can tell that they are just genuinely happy to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they don't care if they bust a myth or if they confirm it. Right. They're getting to blow shit up. Right. They're getting to go to cool places.
The bigger
meet
the better.
Really, right. You know, right. Meet really interesting people. They're on TV. And they're probably making a pretty decent living at it. So, yeah, I'm sure they like what they're doing, and they're good at what they do. And he's the same way.
Yeah. He's got the best job in the whole world. I don't care what you think about TV shows or anything else. I mean, the dude's got the best job in the world. He gets to go all over the world and do some really cool shit, and that's it. That's life right there.
Maybe I should, actually, you've now convinced me to actually watch a full episode.
You should.
It's well, yeah. There I mean, it's one, well worth it.
So many of those shows just suck so bad.
I'll send you some links. There's some specific episodes I think that are better than others.
Yeah.
We're getting close to kickoff.
That's right. Is it 3:30? When is kickoff at noon?
1:45 my time. Kickoff is at 2:00. Well, this game comes on TV at 2, which means it kicks off at like 2:38. But we're getting close to the beginning of the game. Like, I just wanted to point that out.
45 minutes, I think.
45. Yeah. No, we got 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, no, if kick, 15. Yeah, but if kickoff is at 3:30 Eastern time, which is my time, real time.
Real time. I like that.
2:45.
All right, I'm just saying. We need to make sure that we're picking. I'm just trying to be the guy that looks at the clock. Anything else about Josh Gates, or are we done with him for now? Come to the TBRC conference. I'd love it. Yeah. I'm just all signing. Jerry Ray Howell says, what is the expert's thought? That's us, I guess.
Yeah.
On the different sizes of
color. Wait, let me switch hats for a second.
You're an expert. You got to put on a good hat. Yeah. What are the expert's thoughts on the different sizes and color of on Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest? The very tall and dark around here, the Muddy River Monster is grayish whitish, and then the Skunk Ape in Florida is red. Thoughts or reflections?
Well, thank you, Matt Moneymaker, for that question.
Jerry Ray Howell.
Jerry Ray Howell.
In actual fact, there's a variety of colors in as there are in lots of other animals, and some of them are darker and some of them aren't. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but Ken Stewart, who's a member of the TBRC, has actually done the analysis of our database of sighting reports that we've published. And certain percentages of them are white, certain percentages of them are dark versus reddish versus brownish. So I think there's some variation in there. I don't think that it's the case that, you know, all skunk apes are reported as red, though it does seem that a lot of them are. In Oklahoma, I can tell you that some of them are reddish, some of them are brownish, some of them are black. The one I saw was very, very dark, if that's what I saw. So I think there's just natural variation.
It's like the black bear. I mean, you've got black bears that are black. You've got them that are cinnamon. Some are even white.
We've got some pictures of a beautiful cinnamon black bear in near Area X. Big old bear. Gorgeous coloration, but not black. Red. A red bear. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you throw Bergman's rule in. So that would allow for height variations, at least, as far as latitude. But
Yeah.
Bergman's rule. Look it up.
Bergman's rule. Because we're not going to tell you. We're experts.
Has there been any that's worth talking about? Melba Ketchum update?
Oh no,
stuff
dude,
since the last show.
The last. Yeah. Well, what we posted on our Facebook wall just the other day is that she's claimed in the past that she was involved in the 9/11 remain analysis, and those people who decided to look into that can't find any reference to her or any of her companies in the list of those who did that work. So that's damning, and not just damning in a way that is like that's like particularly vile and damning in my book.
Well, you know, I thought about it. I made a short post on our wall about it, and I thought about it some more yesterday. It's possible that, that she did have some assistance in it. I mean, I don't know. That the article or the blog certainly seems to present a pretty strong case that she didn't. But, you know, who's to say that maybe she did? What I find interesting is, if I were her, it would seem in my best interest to
shut the hell up.
Shut the hell up. No, to squash that.
Yeah.
If I'm staking my reputation to the point that I'm going out there and publicly touting my contribution to working on one of the worst tragedies that has ever befallen this country. And some, you know, some punk comes along and says, oh, well, I can't find any evidence of that. Bitch, shut the fuck up. Here's, you know, right. here's the proof. I would be slapping that up on the internet as fast as I could
right.
to counteract that claim. And if you had assisted, it would seem very easy to come up with some kind of verification that you could put up there and say, see, this is legit. I really did this. Now you need to sit the hell down.
And there could be a logical explanation as to why she's not on the list. It could be that one lab subcontracted out to her. So that mm-hmm. there could be an explanation. And I completely agree with you that
she's under NDA. There's an embargo on her.
There's going to be a paper, and I can't talk about it.
But no, I mean that's what is the most interesting to me is that, you know, if someone's out there making this claim, and it's a pretty, like you said, it's a damning claim. I mean, if you went out there and said that you were part of this and you really weren't, then you're a pretty despicable person.
Yeah. It's specifically because of what it is, right?
Yes.
And because of what it means, if it's in fact true that she did not have any role in this, the fact that you would try to wrap yourself in that tragedy mm-hmm. for your own personal gain is truly repulsive, yeah. which is, to your point, why you need to get ahead of it if it's true.
Right.
Like, if I actually did that work, I'd want everyone to know that it's true. I agree with you.
But, and it just points to the larger problem that she has had through this whole thing, and that is that they have just completely screwed this thing up from the get-go.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, you know, from her choice of PR people to her choice of interviews, the things that she said, the things that she hasn't said. I mean, it's just been a goat ranch from day one.
A goat ranch.
Goat ranch.
And even if, you know, okay, let's say that she did. She assisted in identifying victims of 9/11. And someone saying that she didn't, and for whatever reason, she's not correcting it, she's not clarifying it, she's not putting out a statement. What in the hell is wrong with you? You know, why? I mean, this is pretty freaking black and white. This is a pretty simple issue where you should be able to just step right up to the microphone and clear it all up.
Explain it.
I think it's right. pretty clear what happened is that Bigfoot DNA was found in the rubble of the 9/11 towers, and she's reluctant to release that. I think it'll come out in the peer review.
Maybe it's in the paper.
I don't know if we have time to talk about it, but you know, there was the whole issue with Smedge's sample coming back from the two different labs as being Black Bear.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that.
And Justin DNA.
Right.
Yeah.
That is good. Yeah.
Right.
And all I have to say about it is this. I thought it was really interesting, and I was really following along with it until I started seeing people trying to explain how it could still be Bigfoot DNA, but it came back as Black Bear. And that's – I just threw my hands up and said, I'm sorry. Well, this is too much apologetic.
I think the results of this test go toward what Sam had – you had actually put, I think, on the Bigfoot Show page on Facebook, is when you said you thought that Smedja is part of the term you used was a long con, which I lean toward real strongly now, because what are the odds? You said you shot a Bigfoot, and you know exactly where that was, and you go back there, and you just happen to find bear. That is the odds of that are so astronomical that you would find a chunk of a bear at a place where you said you buried a Bigfoot.
Right.
To me, right there says the guy's full of crap. It's a hoax.
Right.
Forget it. I mean, I think the reason he submitted that, in all probability, was just to keep it going,
my understanding is that it was Barcutino and somebody else who actually did this submission.
Yeah,
but he gave them the chunk.
Well, sure he did. But then and I give them lots of credit because they tried to get to the bottom of it. They probably from their own pocketbook had this thing tested and it not just one place.
Yeah,
and they came back as bear with human contamination, and the human contamination just happens to look an awful lot like the guy who says he is the one who.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't just that. I mean, the DNA that came back, it's his DNA.
Yeah.
And what's even more interesting is his
he's a Bigfoot apparently.
His ancestral You know, I mean, because, you know, when you look at somebody's DNA, you can tell more. I mean, there's more than just identifying the person. I mean, they can tell basically where in the world you came from. Well, where in the world he came from is the same place that Ketchum is claiming that her maternal DNA came from in this Sasquatch hybrid that she's proposing. So not only is it what is the chance that this dude provided, you know, two different samples or one sample that tested two different ways,
right?
With one being Sasquatch and one being bear in his DNA. On top of what are the chances that this Sasquatch hybrid DNA originated from freaking Durkistan or wherever it was that they're claiming it came from, and Justin Smedja's ancestral DNA just happens to come from the same freaking place.
Durkistan in the spring, there is no more beautiful place. I'm just going to put that out there. Yeah. I even though it's good for the show because it gives us something to talk about, I so want Melba Ketchum's 15 minutes to be completely over now. Just put the damn paper out. Just do it. End our suffering.
You know what? One last beauty shot of her with her blowing a kiss toward the camera. And that's like as a symbolic goodbye would be great for me.
See, I have those moments too where I'm like, okay, you know, it's time for the crazy train to pull into the station. But then it just makes for such exquisite people watching that it's really hard to stop. I mean, because just between the you know, to use Paul's favorite word, the sycophants and the apologists and the, you know, because the really interesting thing about this, and this was the really the one thing I wanted to touch on, if this is a hoax or some just incredible screw up or whatever it is, it's not just on her at this point. It's on a lot of people.
Right.
Because, you know, if you look back, okay, look back at the Georgia freezer hoax. Nobody really latched on to that other than Biscardi. You know, Lauren Coleman came out at one point and said that, you know, he didn't want to say 100%, but it was kind of looking good. Which he's since gone back and, you know, scrubbed from the records of Cryptomundo. But, you know, other than Biscardi, nobody really latched on to those guys. With this, you have numerous people who are either, you know, jumping into the ring to say that they're contributors or that they're part of it or, you know, in some way attaching their wagon to this in order to, you know, bolster their credibility, bolster the amount of attention they're getting.
Bad choice.
If this thing goes down the toilet, it's not just going to be her that goes with it.
And I would say that if you're still doing that, if you're still attaching your car to the Melba's crazy train, that that when this thing goes down, as it is perfectly obvious it will go down at this point, you need to get the hell out of here. You need to just leave the field and go look for Loch Ness monsters or rods or space aliens or something else, because you're not needed at this point.
I said a long time ago, if you were putting all your eggs in this basket, you need to get some more chickens. Bottom line, all right? Because
maybe they only have the one egg.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, really, you know, if... You know, it's one thing if you're some, you know, freaking creduloid who is uneducated and, you know, barely possesses the faculties to get through life. If you're buying into this, okay, you get a free pass. You know, it's really not your fault. It's more about genetics and the education
and
that you
receive. And apparently pretty soon you will not be allowed to buy a gun.
Right. But, you know, but if you're somebody that presents yourself as being somebody,
right,
or, you know, as being someone who is someone who anybody else should listen to, and you're still hanging on to this thing, you know, it's time to stop treading water. You need to go ahead and sink to the bottom. And
which is not to say, you know, because you could get dangerously close to saying, well, then if this is how you're going to treat me as this person who put my egg in her basket, which sounds kind of dirty now that you put it that way. But anyway,
someone who
put my egg in her basket. You know, if you're saying, well, if because I gave her the time of day at one point, I'm going to be ostracized. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, if you're still with her, like there could have been a point. I'm going to be reasonable and say there could have been a point at some early time when you could have looked at her work and you could have looked at her and said, she's credible, she might come up with something, and then you could have supported her or worked with her at some early point. But if you're
absolutely
today, and forget about it.
Yeah, there was a point where I was hopeful. I mean, there was a point where I was sitting there saying, right. wow, you know, this seems like this could be some legitimate stuff. I mean, they're talking all this DNA science and, you know, I see these people who I respect,
right.
You know, getting behind this, but you're absolutely right. That's at point A. We are at point, you know, X or Y. We're getting really close to Z.
I hope so.
If you're still there and still supporting her, then you really need to reevaluate your.
You need to finish the eighth grade. See, speaking of credulous, I'd like to read my favorite question that from somebody put on there. Just I'm guessing from the credulous category. This is verbatim how All this right. was worded. How about if habituation really works and if hoaxing we get benefits or brings down the community, and what psychological reason do the drier lints of the world do it?
I think Mark.
Mark is Swedish.
It's really about punctuation.
Well, the way he spells his last name makes me think that English is not his first language.
Yeah,
that's possible. I'm on Facebook. I can find that out.
But I, yeah. what could you even, how it really works?
I've got a feeling that he's pronouncing that J with a Y sound.
He's from Manitoba. At least right now he is. He lives there. That's not where he's from. I'll tell you about his habituation. Yeah. There was a time in my life when every time I heard any sort of habituation story whatsoever, if anybody claimed any kind of habituation, I just dismissed them out of hand. In fact, in the 2000, was it 2003, the Willow Creek Symposium, where John Green spoke, he basically said that. He said, if anybody claims habituation, they're crazy. He didn't say it like that. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But I'm also totally aware that if you look at the things that we're saying happen in Area X, that there's a little whiff of habituation there. There's a little bit of a, you know, kind of in the air. You can kind of smell it. You know, I'm not going to say it's habituation, but there's some of the things are similar. So I don't know. I don't know at this point. I think that some people make habituation claims, and just what the things they say sound completely crazy.
Well, there's right. different flavors of it. I mean, there's cohabitating, which is what yeah. I would argue.
When
know,
they crawl
Area
into
X
bed
is.
With you, if yeah. you say the Bigfoot yeah. crawls into bed and snuggles in,
when you got one wearing a butler outfit and he's bringing tea in the yeah. morning.
And he's asking for specific spices at your back door. Yes, that's probably yes. a claim that. Yeah.
I would think it would be highly improbable that if these beings exist, just, you know, let's just take the Pacific Northwest, for example, that I think it's highly improbable that there haven't been instances where humans living either in cabins, whatever, have had repeated visits, especially like if you had a really mellow environment and there were kids, let's say. And these things would show up, not that they would bring them flowers or rocks or any of that, but coming back where they felt they weren't threatened. And they might find it amusing. We know higher primates will do this with children as well, that they'll get close to them because they know they're small. And I think it would be incredible that it hasn't happened to one yeah. degree or another. In one particular flavor. Again, to the point where they're coming in the house for Sunday dinner, that's going to be a little crazy. But as far as I would think repeated visits, and maybe even where the people who live there have given them food, they've taken it. I would put that as probable.
Pancakes?
Maybe. Bagels. Perhaps. If chocolate chips are involved.
Pepper?
Pepper, is that Fox?
I think so, yeah. Fox is dead, by the way. Did we talk about it in the last show? Apparently
no,
Fox is dead.
Yeah, I think he's passed away since the last show.
Yeah,
a moment of silence for Fox.
Jeez.
All right,
that's enough.
I want to say, I just want to say, I am deeply grateful for Mark Johnson or Janssen or whatever however he pronounced his name for asking us that question, that very yeah. thoughtful question. I appreciate that.
I would like to give props to
yes.
To Facebook user Monster Colors for citing the John West Salmon Bear Fight ad. It's one of the greatest advertisements of all time.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
I don't know why, if your last name is Colors, why your mom and dad would name you Monster.
I rode the bus with a kid named Jack Daniels. That's all I'm saying.
Seriously?
And his brother's name was Elvis. I've heard that story before.
Have I told my friend whose last name is Bogus? Have I said that before on the show?
Nice. Bogus?
His last name is Bogus, and he went to the library with his friend whose last name was Blank, and they tried to get library cards, and she wouldn't give them to him.
Oh, wow.
Because he was Rick Bogus, and the other guy was like something Blank, and they're like, no, you can't have library
cards. I actually did that back before Christmas. A friend of mine and I, we went out to dinner, and when the girl asked for our names, I said it was Hoovelman's Party of Two. And what was really great was she looked me dead in the eye and she said, could you spell that, please?
Oh, awesome.
Mm. And I, yeah, so.
And you're like,
H-E-U.
Just start putting a bunch of vowels in there. It doesn't really matter. Oh. All right. I'm gonna put a pin in this show just because I have people coming over. They're going to be here any second. And
Who you got? Oh, we're going to do the picks real quick.
Oh, picks. Oh, yes, right. Picks. This is not at all creative. No, Scott, you go first. You're the one that actually cares about football.
I do. You know what? I hate to say this. I really want the Niners to win, but I'm going to take a shot that this Crabtree thing is going to kind of mess with the team. It's a pretty big allegation, and I think it kind of messes with the mojo of a team. So I think the Falcons will probably win today.
Oh,
I think
God, I hate the Falcons.
Yeah, I don't hate them, but I just like the Niners better. I lived in the Bay Area for a while, and I'm a fan. I like their coach. I like his intensity, Harbaugh. Mm. But I think it's likely Falcons and Patriots in the Super Bowl with the Patriots winning.
Oh, yeah. The Patriots would win that.
Mm. Yeah.
Sam, do you want to get on this?
As a longtime Falcons supporter, being from Georgia, I know what bitter disappointment tastes like. And I've learned that, you know, no matter how much you get your hopes up, that's what you're getting at the end of the season. I'm going to go against the grain and say that the Falcons win today. And that they go into the Super Bowl and they beat the Ravens.
The Ravens.
Ooh, Ravens beat the Patriots.
God, I would love to see the Ravens get in the Super Bowl.
That's why I'm
just
calling.
Because it would be.
It gives Ray Lewis another chance to be involved in a post Super Bowl party murder.
Exactly right. And nobody ever talks about that anymore.
I know, and I love Ray Lewis. I think Ray Lewis is a really cool guy.
Why does that not get publicized?
Because there was no evidence. But the thing that's scary, I just read about this when that happened. The two guys were knifed, and he was there. Yeah. But it was a group of people, and he got rid. Apparently, he had a white suit on that was covered in blood, and it mysteriously disappeared. Who knows? It could have been self-defense. We don't know. But we know he was there. Two guys got killed. It was some crap. Right the day after the Super Bowl, 11 years ago or whatever, 12 years ago, they won. But, okay, you take that out of the equation. I think he's one of the great – great players and great personalities in the NFL. I mean, he's just a good guy. So I give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, Michael Crabtree, on the other hand, I've been to that motel, and I know that the hookers don't like to be sexually assaulted. So,
all right, I'm going to be boring. I'm going to say it's going to be Niners-Patriots, and the Patriots are going to win. Just because I think the Patriots, they're an amazing team.
I think that would be the most disappointing matchup.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Out of all of them.
I completely agree. I would love to see the Niners win it. So there we are. We'll know in 2 weeks.
So who? Because Super Bowls were, okay, I said the Patriots. Sam, you said?
Falcons.
Falcons. And Brian?
My heart says Niners. My brain says Patriots.
I'm pulling for the Niners, but yeah, the Patriots, yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
All right. Well, that's our show. Okay.
My instructor was Mr. Langley, and he taught me to sing a song. If you'd like to hear it, I can sing it for you.
Yes, I'd like to hear it now. Sing it for me.
It's called Daisy. Daisy.